If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Kennedy.
I'm Bill Hemmer.
I'm Sandra Smith, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Friday, October 21st, 2022. I'm Jessica Rosenthal. A handful of congressional seats will determine which party controls the House this fall, and among those, an even smaller handful have become ground zero midterm battles.
We're going through something right now as a country, and we need leaders who say, look, this is how we chart our way out of this.
Michigan's 7th District has one of the most competitive and most expensive races in the country.
I can't look at my kids and say America was on the wrong track, and I didn't do anything to fix it when it mattered.
I'm Chris Foster. British Prime Minister Liz Truss is out. Democrats here have 18 days to make their case for staying in power in Congress.
Is people paying more for everything disastrous? Yes. Our economy is having real difficulty with inflation persistently above 8% on an annual basis. And gas fuels all of those things.
We're speaking with Fox News Sunday host Shannon Bream.
And I'm Tommy Lahren. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
As voters begin voting and we get closer to November 8th, the money is flowing out the door and for the most part into TV, streaming, and internet ads. Some races are getting a bit more attention and cash than others. See Michigan's 7th District. After redistricting, it would have gone for President Biden by just under 1 point. And the fight between the Democratic incumbent Alyssa Slotkin and Republican State Senator Tom Barrett has highlighted the fierce competition toss-ups have become.
Tom Barrett sides with Big Pharma, who back his campaign. Barrett even voted to protect drug companies when they sell dangerous and defective drugs.
When you need another typical politician, choose Slotkin. A liberal voting record. Failed policies.
Nonprofit data tracker Open Secrets says Slotkin's raised nearly $9 million. Barrett's raised more than $2 million as of the end of September. But millions more have poured into spending on this race from outside PACs, with the biggest donors being the Republican-aligned Congressional Leadership Fund, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, House Majority PAC, and the National Republican Congressional Committee. This district highlights ad impacts projection that when all is said and done, $9.7 billion roughly will have been spent on ads alone in these midterms.
This is, I think, the most important off-year election that we've had since Roosevelt's time. I mean that sincerely, because so much is at stake.
President Biden said that in Oregon last week, where a former Democrat turned independent could result in a Republican becoming governor in the traditionally blue state. In Michigan, Congresswoman Slotkin currently represents the 8th, but she's running in the 7th after redistricting. And while she says inflation is on everyone's minds, she defends much of the federal spending she voted for.
Yeah, I think that it depends on what program we're talking about, right?
Congresswoman Alyssa Slotkin is running for a third term in the House.
If you're here sitting in mid-Michigan, and, you know, we have a ton of auto plants, a bunch of auto workers and retirees, people who work at parts plants, and you start talking about chips and the CHIPS Act and incentivizing an American, you know, microchip industry, you'll get applause, right? No matter what side of the aisle they're on, because we have had our plants on again, off again, stopping and starting for 18 months because of a 14-cent microchip. So that program I have found there to be really strong support for. Prescription drugs, lowering the cost of prescription drugs, particularly allowing Medicare to negotiate drug prices, those I feel strongly about. You know, when you vote on a bill, you know, an infrastructure as well, I should say. Infrastructure is the whole reason we're able to do things in Michigan is because we passed a bill last November at the federal level. Now, no bill is perfect. And anyone who sells you a bill of goods and says, you know, I only vote for something if it's a perfect bill and otherwise I'm out, that's just not how legislation works. It is about negotiating, particularly with the other side, and not getting everything that you want. That's the nature of a deal, and anyone who's gone to work knows that. So do I support everything that's been in every bill? No. Would I have loved if there would have been programs that came off some of the bills about a year ago? Yes. But I have to make a decision on net on what's good for my district. And when it comes to things like prescription drugs, I hear about that like consistently for 4 years. So how do I vote against lowering the cost of prescription drugs when people stop me in the grocery store crying because they can't afford their child's insulin? So you just have to make a decision and use your judgment and then be able to explain it to your voters.
To that point, if Democrats don't do well, and I know the projections, right, the Republicans will take the House. But if it's by a lot, what will be something you would say that, that maybe Democrats should have focused on more or less?
I mean, I had said this over and over, both publicly and privately, since last November. Every single White House press conference since, I think, last November should have started about the economy. That we should have been talking more seriously about the economy and the plan a year ago. And I'll be honest, there were people who, on my side of the aisle, who were like, look, it's temporary. And, like, let's not talk about it. And that was a crap suggestion. And it just doesn't, I'm sorry, sorry to use not so nice language, but that, to me, I'm not saying that this administration, or frankly, any future administration, could just, like, fire a silver bullet and fix inflation with one blow. And that's the thing I would ask to my Republican colleagues is, like, they're almost gleeful about inflation. When gas prices went up, you know, people like my opponent were celebrating. And it's like, look, we're going through something right now as a country, and we need leaders who say, look, this is how we chart our way out of this and talk about what we're going to do to try to manage the pain.
What are the biggest differences between you and Tom Barrett? I mean, obviously you're a Democrat, he's a Republican, and in this environment, you know, pretty stark pictures have been painted. But what do you want your constituents or potential constituents to think of when they think of those differences between you and your Republican opponent?
Yeah, I mean, there are many differences. We have totally different views on economics and, like, competing for that next generation of vehicles to be made in Michigan, of the next generation of manufacturing here. He doesn't want to throw $1 at that problem. I am absolutely willing to be Team USA over Team China, and we differ on that. We differ, obviously, on the issue of choice. Very clearly, he's for no exceptions, and I believe that Roe v. Wade is a decent standard. But I think at the end of the day, what is different about this opponent from previous campaigns and opponents that I've had is that in previous campaigns, I've run against someone who's been just really straight about their views. They haven't tried to hide. They've owned them. That doesn't mean I agree with them. Of course, we're competing. But I sort of respected that they put out there, this is my view. It's always been my view. I'm holding to this. And now I think what we see is someone who's actually got a more extreme record, who's been, you know, really sort of on the record with his votes and with his statements in a sort of right of his own party, votes against his own party during bipartisan deals, who's now trying to tap dance because his consultants say that it's a tough race and you want to win. And that, to me, is about character. And I think it would be, to me, the most important thing of this race is, look, people don't have to agree with me on everything. They'll never agree with me on everything. But do you want principled leaders? Do you want someone who listens and who will tell you straight what they're going to do? Or do you want someone who just is sort of at the whim of the next political talking point and yet will vote in a more extreme way? And I think that's the fundamental difference.
What is he tap dancing around?
Certainly around abortion. I mean, he has campaigned and fundraised off for his whole career on zero exceptions, nothing for women who are raped or who have been the victims of incest. He's been very, very staunchly, he's introduced legislation to increase criminal penalties on doctors and women. Like, he's really been a champion on that issue. But then when he's in a tough race, he'll just say, I'm pro-life, I'm pro-life. When they ask him specifically, what about, you know, women who have been raped? He's been told not to say any of those words, and he just won't own his position. And I think particularly for women, they can see through that. And I just, again, if you have that strongly held view, which lots of people do, just own it, man.
Now, Slotkin's Republican opponent, State Senator Tom Barrett, is saying what many Republicans are saying, secure the border, stop the spending, get tougher on crime. He supports a parent's bill of rights on the education front and does support what he calls responsible spending to help Ukraine. But he had this to say to Slotkin's criticisms of him.
My opponent is in a desperate attempt to try and, throw criticism at me to deflect away from her failures in Congress that have, you know, led to record high inflation that families like mine are facing, Energy costs that are through the roof. We're about to hit another cold winter in Michigan, and we're already seeing that home heating costs are just going to be astronomical this winter. But, you know, my opponent wants to make this entire campaign about abortion. I am pro-life. People in my district know that about me. I've been elected as a state legislator with a pro-life voting record. In Michigan, we have this disastrous Proposal 3 late-term radical abortion proposal on the ballot that my opponent supports. There are very few countries in the world that allow abortions beyond 20 weeks of pregnancy. And if Michigan passes this proposal, it will nullify all of our state laws that have restrictions on late-term abortions. I can't be more clear about it. I'm opposed to Proposal 3. That's what my opponent supports. I frankly don't.
I know a lot of Republicans right now are talking about inflation, crime, the border. And so a lot of these local congressional races start to all kind of sound the same. But you actually have something going on in Michigan in your district that's pretty unique, and it has to do with, I would say, manufacturing. You have gone after Congresswoman Slotkin on corporate incentives, tax incentives, to get companies to produce in Michigan. I think I read that you called the backing of such incentives to GM for their battery cell plant in Lansing corporate welfare. I look at like Ohio and Intel and the CHIPS Act, and so I just want to ask you, what about corporate welfare? I mean, even some conservatives will tell you that, you know, while government should be limited and small, you can still use the power of incentives and tax-related ones at that to push, you know, an agenda. Why is that one of your criticisms?
Yeah, well, it's not tax incentives. Tax incentives and having a competitive tax structure certainly is a conservative, you know, viewpoint that I hold, along with, you know, probably most or nearly all other conservatives. We have to have a competitive tax system. What they are actually attempting to do, and what my opponent has supported, is direct cash subsidies for private global corporations. And this money comes out of the back pocket of working families that are facing 40-year record high costs of living challenges, record high inflation, and fuel costs that have hit an all-time high. And families are struggling to pay the bills and just get by. And Alyssa Slotkin's answer to this is to take money from them that they pay in taxes. You know, I remind people, these aren't voluntary. These are mandatory. And if you don't pay your taxes, you'll go to jail. And they take that money that they extract from people's wallet, working families, and they give it to these private global corporations. And the jobs are only required to last 6 months. They cost taxpayers four times more than the workers are going to actually receive in wages. And the stacking up of issues of concern with it lead me to feel like, you know, the corporate entities that have the lobbying muscle and the ability to influence policy twist the arms of these legislators to get these high dollar corporate, you know, subsidies in place. These aren't tax code changes that benefit all taxpayers by being more competitive. They directly pick winners and losers, and they are done in a way that benefits those that, you know, play along with the legislators that and the executive branch that vote for them.
Finally, does all of this feel a little overwhelming? You are in one of the hottest races in the country, among the most expensive races, and maybe the most expensive midterm year ever. What's the pressure level like?
Yeah, it is. You know, there is a lot of pressure. There's a lot to, you know, think about. My opponent, you know, we're just a few weeks from this election, and she's on pace to spend $1 million a week attacking me over the final days of this campaign. There were a lot of reasons not to run for Congress. Family, you know, responsibilities, the challenge of campaigning, the challenge of governing. But there was one reason to do it, which was that America's on the wrong track. And I can't look at my kids and say, you know, America was on the wrong track and I didn't do anything to fix it when it mattered. I'm a working class conservative. And, you know, I think that the voters of this district will see that. Despite the disparity of funding between myself and my opponent, I feel strongly that, you know, come election day that we'll win this seat. And our polling is neck and neck, despite the fact that my opponent has spent, you know, well in excess of $10 million at this point. The total spending in this district is close to $30 million. You know, we're hanging in there neck and neck right now, and I'm confident that we're going to win this thing in just a few more days.
Michigan Congressional Republican candidate Tom Barrett in the 7th. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
The Will Kane Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Kane as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
This is Tommy Lahren with your Fox News commentary coming up.
6.5 weeks ago, Boris Johnson was the British Prime Minister and Queen Elizabeth was the Queen. Now they've got King Charles and Liz Truss as Prime Minister for a few more days.
Given the situation, I cannot deliver the mandate on which I was elected by the Conservative Party. I have therefore spoken to His Majesty the King to notify him that I am resigning as leader of the Conservative Party.
It will elect a new leader who, because the party controls Parliament, will become the nation's new Prime Minister. President Biden's thanking Prime Minister Truss and says our nation's enduring friendship will never change.
She was a good partner on Russia and Ukraine, and the British are going to solve their problems, but she was a good partner.
A good partner for 44 days from appointment to resignation.
She tried to propose a so-called mini-budget that did not go over really well.
Shannon Bream's the host of Fox News Sunday.
She was talking about the fact that she wanted a low-tax, high-growth economy. She wanted to take the advantage of the freedoms of Brexit. She said, listen, I realize, given the way this has fallen apart, I can't actually deliver the mandate that I campaigned on. This is what I said I was going to do if I got elected. So I've gone to His Majesty the King, which it was interesting to hear that. I think we're still all adjusting to the fact that there is a king now, not a queen, over there in the UK. But she said, I'm resigning as leader of the Conservative Party and walking away.
Now, they don't elect people like we do. Mm-hmm. In modern times, they're elected by members of the party. Like in the past, I'm sure a monarch would just say, you're the prime minister now. But now, for example, if we had their system, Nancy Pelosi might be prime minister for a while. Mm-hmm. If things kind of fell apart, then maybe AOC becomes president for a while. I mean, so it's not quite as democratic as our system. Only paid. It's a complicated thing. But in the very end, the last two people standing for the office, there are nominations and ballots, et cetera, and then it goes to the general public. But it's not really the general public; it's dues-paying mm-hmm. members of the party. Which, in this case, with Truss, she was elected by about she wasn't even elected by 160,000 people voted out of a population of about 67 million. So sometimes I get jealous about their system; they don't have these 2-year presidential cycles. But on the other hand, it's because it's downfalls too.
Right. I mean, I'm fascinated by it because I think it's always interesting to watch the debates in Parliament and how those go down and the hear, hear and the, you know, stomping of the feet and all that kind of stuff. I think it's interesting because it's so different for us, although there have been some tantrums I have seen on the House and Senate floors over here in the U.S. of A. The way that they can call snap elections and their resignations, I mean, it's fascinating. But, you know, she campaigned on one very specific thing and that fell apart very quickly.
Yeah. I can't fulfill the mandate. So I'm out. And part of the problem over mm-hmm. there now is that they're very, very divided over who the next person might be. There is no obvious replacement for her, so there'll be some infighting there. So mm-hmm. back here at home, on our side of the Atlantic, President Biden, also a victim of some economic circumstances. He's releasing the last of this 180 million barrels of oil from the reserve, 15 million more. Critics say, look, A, it's a drop in the bucket. 2, this is just politics. Supporters say, well, yeah, it is kind of politics. We have to look like he's doing something, but he's doing something here.
Yeah, and the fact is these releases from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve have started to raise real concerns amongst people on all, you know, political sides of the aisle who say it has been this low since the early 80s, and it is meant for wartime footing. It's meant for really disastrous situations. Is people paying more for everything disastrous? Yes, our economy is having real difficulty with inflation persistently above 8% on an annual basis. And gas fuels all of those things. I mean, transporting food and goods and all of that trickles out. But I think most people on their minds think, no, this is when we literally have a war in the Middle East or something else that prevents us from getting these crude and oil resources from a different place. And it's whiplash, I think, for the refineries and producers here in the U.S. who say, listen, we took you at your word when you said during the campaign that we were getting rid of fossil fuels. Many of them have said they've retooled about a third of their operations to go for green energy. And now they're under pressure. You saw the president say, these people have got to stop taking these enormous profits and they've got to do more to help the people here in America, where they're like, listen, if you're pushing us to now go back to refining more fossil fuel when you told us we're getting rid of it, we're business people. These moves cost tens of billions of dollars. They can't move on a dime and we're getting whiplash.
Yeah. Those CEOs are like, look, man, do you want oil or not? And
take yes for an answer.
And part of the thing out of the White House, part of the mantra is that, look, you have all these thousands of unused leases, which is true. But those leases, A, don't mean there's oil underneath the ground, and it doesn't mean you're going to get a permit to drill for it. And like you said, they've already pivoted some of their business to other things.
Mm-hmm. And everybody, I think, agrees that there is some kind of transition that will eventually happen to more green energy sources. But the realist in the room will say, even if that's our ultimate goal, right now we are not there. We don't have the equipment and the production. We can keep working towards those things. But right now, there are people in this country paying $7 a gallon for gas because that's what we're running on. That's what's available. And that's, you know, we're just not there yet in the transition. So we have to be realistic about what we need right now. And, you know, by kind of saying they disfavor fossil fuel production here in the U.S., even though producers here argue that they do it cleaner than anybody in the world. They did encourage those people to change what they were producing and to really get going on that transition, which, of course, makes us more dependent on oil from other sources. And some of those people are not our friends.
Right. The president also said the other day, look, give me a couple more senators and we'll get federal abortion rights back. Mm-hmm. There are some political analysts who say that the pro-choice vote, that there's going to be this wave of women and younger voters and a lot of men who are going to come out to the polls who wouldn't have otherwise come, to punish Republicans in November. They're saying that's being underestimated. I guess it remains to be seen.
Mm-hmm. I definitely think there is that coalition that's going to show up. I mean, you overturn Roe v. Wade after 50 years, that's going to make people show up. And we've seen it, that people have said it's inched up the list of issues that we give to people and other pollsters give to people. Like, what's the number one thing? Listen, inflation and crime seem to still far outpace that, but abortion has definitely moved up several rankings in what people care about. So that is going to be a voting block that shows up. That's not good for Republicans. It's great for Democrats, but there is a worry among Democrats that they've peaked too early, that issue with the Dobbs decision overturning Roe was so much earlier in the year, and that people and passions have cooled a little bit over that. And we're watching as states now figure it out state by state what they're going to do. Listen, in blue states, there's no threat, say in a New York or California, that abortion's going away. So does that really drive people in those blue states where we expect those, you know, governor's races, many of the House races and Senate races would trend to stay blue? But in other places where independent voters and tough battles are happening, that voting block, even if it's a 1 or 2 or 3%, you know, swing, that can make all the difference. So Democrats are hoping it does.
Utah Senate Republican Mike Lee is a scheduled guest this week on Fox News Sunday. He's running against Evan McMullen, a former Republican, now independent, endorsed by state Democrats. He says Senator Lee betrayed his oath of office by supporting President Trump's efforts to overturn Joe Biden's election.
You sought to urge the White House that had lost an election to find fake electors to overturn the will of the people. Senator Lee, that was the most egregious betrayal of our nation's Constitution in its history by a U.S. senator, I believe, and it will be your legacy.
Senator Lee says he was just researching whether the results could be changed and in the end voted to certify President Biden's election.
Evan, that's not true. You know that's not true. You, sir, owe me an apology. Listen.
McMullen, meantime, says if he wins, he won't caucus with either party, Democrats or Republicans.
Does he come to town and say, like, okay, you got to persuade me. My vote is the one you're going to need, especially if you end up in a Senate that's 49-50 or however you want to look at that with this. There are some independents there, but they tend to caucus with the Democrats. So it's so strange in that, you know, he ran for president back in 2016 and he was not a Democrat. He's couching himself as an independent or a different kind of candidate. But essentially, you know, my understanding of what happened in Utah is that the Democrats were persuaded not to run someone and that Evan McMullen is trying to sweep up that part of the electorate. They had a debate this week that was very heated. We have invited Evan McMullen, of course, also on the show, but I'd like to get Mitt Romney on the show, too. He's a sitting U.S. senator who will not endorse his colleague, Mike Lee, who is a sitting U.S. senator from the same party. So it's been a very, very weird race. And a lot of folks think that Mike Lee shouldn't be having this much trouble. And the race is tighter than is comfortable for his camp, for sure.
House Republican leader. House Minority Leader for the moment, Kevin McCarthy, says a couple things this week. We'll end Ukraine support if we're elected. But he downplays the idea of impeaching. President Biden. He's got some opposition on those issues from members of his mm-hmm. party. Now, if the Republicans take the House and maybe even the Senate, is there going to be a battle over the party's direction? Does McCarthy even become Speaker? Does a newer crop step up?
You know, there's always that kind of rattling about, oh, we're not going to go with the guy everybody expects and it's time to upend this thing. I think there'll definitely be people who vote against McCarthy within the Republican Party, but they know they do so at the risk of committee assignments and all those other things. I think at the end of the day, when the dust settles, he probably is the Speaker. I think that's a good bet if Republicans retake the House. He is going to have members that he's got to wrangle, just like, you know, Nancy Pelosi has had to do as Speaker, which this very progressive squad group that doesn't want to vote on some of the things she wants to vote them to be a yes vote on and part of the Democrat agenda. They want to push further. Like any Speaker, if it's McCarthy, he's going to have to do that with the more extreme right wing of his party as well. But these conversations about Ukraine funding and all of that, you know, I do think it will be a different world if the Republicans are running the House. If they're running the Senate, that's going to change a lot of things with, you know, judicial nominations and confirmations. But I think a lot of them kind of don't want to get ahead of themselves, this whole measuring the drapes kind of thing, because they know that even if they do, you know, take over one or both houses, there's a lot to be done to heal some inter-party fissures that are there and are have been on public display.
Shannon, I think we're probably going to talk a couple more times before Election Day. I hope so. Shannon Bream, host of Fox News Sunday. Thanks for coming back on.
I'll chat with you then.
And now, some good news with Tanya J. Powers.
By her own admission, 12-year-old Ella Jorgensen knows she has a, quote, cool story to tell. Ella was struck by lightning recently during intense storms in Arizona. KTVK-TV in Phoenix reports that Ella and her dad were visiting her grandparents in Sun City West when bad weather moved in. She had just stepped outside when they heard thunder. Then a few seconds later, she was hit by the lightning. Her father, Stephen, a Marine veteran, sprang into action. Ella's heart stopped beating three times, and each time Stephen got it started again using CPR. Her doctors credit him with saving her life and say it's likely that it wasn't a direct lightning hit, but that most likely it struck nearby Ella. Her dad says he was trying to keep calm and was picturing the CPR training scene from the TV show The Office in his head the whole time, while also singing the Bee Gees song Stayin' Alive to himself. That song is 100 beats per minute, the same rate at which chest compression should be done when administering CPR, according to the American Heart Association. You can get an idea of the rhythm by checking out the Spotify playlist called Songs to Do CPR To. It's compiled by New York Presbyterian Hospital, and the playlist page even includes a link to a website that gives step-by-step CPR instructions. You never can tell when you might need it, as Ella's family well knows. Tanya J. Powers, Fox News.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com. Subscribe to this podcast at FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Tommy Lahren.
What's on your mind?
After being stuck between two obese passengers on her three-hour American Airlines flight, fellow passenger Dr. Sydney Watson had enough. In a series of tweets, she went all the way off, saying in essence, it's okay if someone wants to be fat, but it's not okay to force others to be sandwiched in between. She also mentioned she asked her fellow passenger's brother to swap seats, to which he smirked and said no. Parts of her rant were harsh, but she brought up a valid point. Why should she have to pay full price for the quarter of her own seat she had to smash into when her two roommates took up the entire space? But American Airlines responded to her a tweet saying their passengers come in all shapes and sizes and essentially, too bad, too sad. Was she rather aggressive and mean-spirited? Yes. Do I agree with her demand for reparations? No. But as a frequent flyer, I will say this. It is rather unfair to pay an arm and a leg for plane tickets and then have someone else's arms and legs in your purchased space. I'm Tommy Lahren.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at FoxNewsPodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to FoxNews.com. Put the power of over 100 meteorologists and the worldwide resources of Fox in your hands with the Fox Weather Podcast. Precise, personal, powerful. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Jimmy Fallon, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.